Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Conscious Awakening series. I'm your host, Sheila Seppi, and my intention with this podcast is to support you in your spiritual and cosmic growth. Each week, we explore inspiring topics of unveilment, resilience, triumph, transformation, and empowerment right here on the Conscious Awakening Network. So today it is my honor, and I am so excited to have Anadeya Judith, PhD, with us. Anadeya is a globally recognized teacher and author of several best-selling books on chakras, psychology, yoga, social change, and women's leadership, which have been translated into 28 different languages. Wow, that's quite a bit. So her latest book, Goddess, Blessed Reunions with the Feminine Face of the Divine, is what we're going to talk about today. Now, Anadeya holds a master's degree in clinical psychology and a doctorate in mind-body health with advanced yoga certifications and some somatic training. As a globally recognized teacher, her workshops have reached at least 163 countries with live and online presence. She is the founder and doctorate of the teaching organization Sacred Centers, a member of the Evolutionary Leadership Council, and has been called a prophet of our time. You can learn more about Anadeya at anadeyajudith.com. So, Anadeya, welcome, welcome, welcome. It is so good to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Sheila. I'm really delighted. And today is International Women's Day. So we have a
Ooh.
great topic to talk about the goddess today.
Absolutely. So I really want to just dive right in. So first off, I want to congratulate you on your new book, and I
Thank you.
want to ask you, who is the goddess and why is she relevant today?
Well, the goddess is everything. Whereas the god was some abstract, distant concept. The goddess is the trees, she's the mountains, she's the flowers in the fields and the ocean. She is life itself. She is the life force that is pouring through everything in its myriad of beautiful expressions. She is creation. The goddess gives birth, so she is the essence of the manifested world in all its beauty and splendor.
Oh, that is just so beautiful. And I know I've studied with the Hopi teachings a lot, and they talk about the goddess as being Grandmother Spider and how she brought life to the planet. And if you really look throughout history, all the indigenous peoples and some of the original peoples of the lands all talk about the goddess and the importance that she has in their life. And so when we talk about the goddess and we're talking about the divine face of the feminine face, sorry, of the divine. I think that this book is something that is right in alignment with that. And I was wondering if you could just tell us, in your book, you say that the goddess is not God. And so I was wondering if you could share a little bit more about that statement.
Well, I don't say that she's not God. I say she's not God in drag. She's
Okay.
not Jehovah in a skirt. She's not the God that has been the chief of the Abrahamic religions and the patriarchal religions just with a little lipstick on. She is a wholly different aspect of creation. She is not the ascetic god that is trying to escape this world for some kind of afterlife. She is embodiment. She is joy. She is celebration. She is beauty and color and pageantry. She is the sacred. She is ritual. She is, sacred theater. She is mythology and stories. She's life itself. So it's very different than just, putting a skirt on the masculine god and saying, okay, well, that refers to everything.
Exactly. So I thank you so much for going into that a little bit more. Now, you also talk about in your book the goddess has different stages, just like all women have different stages in their life. You talk about the maiden, the mother, queen, and the crone. So I was wondering if you could s explain a little bit more about each of these stages and how it really relates to women today.
Well, when we talk about manifestation of the divine and how it expresses itself in this world, you can see that one of the first divisions was dark and light, and another of the early divisions was masculine and feminine, which runs through almost all of biology. And then when we take the manifested world, there's so many different things that we, you know, sort of categorize them into archetypes. Mm-hmm. So the maiden, the mother, and the crone, and the queen are classic archetypes of the goddess. And often she's referred to as the triple goddess, maiden, yes, mother, crone. But I have added the category of queen because in the ancient stories, the goddess was referred to as the queen of heaven and earth. You know, Inanna was the queen of heaven and earth. Isis was the queen of Egypt. You know, that there's a queen archetype. And so the maiden represents the earliest stages of a woman's life, but it also represents mornings, new beginnings, the new moon, springtime, which in the Northern Hemisphere it is now. So this is the maiden time. If you're going to start a project, you might appeal to the maiden because you're at the beginning of something. The mother represents the ripening and the fullness of what has been started. She's the summer's fruit, the fall harvest. She's the swollen belly. She is the fullness of everything. So women give birth. We can't give birth to a new age without a woman to give birth to it, without a goddess to take care of the birthing process. Then the crone, which sometimes has a bad name, you know, people, oh, she's just a crone, a hag. I, you know, debated whether to use the word crone or wise woman. But I wanted to reclaim the word crone because it is a regal name, actually. And some say it relates to crown. The crone is the stage of a woman's life after she has finished raising her children or given birth to her business or whatever she does. And it is the quieter. She goes more introspective. It is the period of rest and darkness. She's even the queen of death, which in the goddess tradition is not the end of things. It's just part of an ongoing cycle. Every year in the fall and winter, things die and they go down into the ground and they are reborn again. And if they didn't have that period of rest, they couldn't regenerate. You know, in the patriarchal mindset, we just keep going in one direction more and more and more. That's not sustainable. So when we've lost the cyclic aspect of the goddess, mm-hmm, we have something that we can't sustain. And then the fourth one, queen, is because many women are living longer than they used to. I mean, in the old days, women had 8 to 10 children. And by the time they were 60, their child rearing days were finally done and they were worn out. But now, you know, women are choosing not to have children or to have fewer children, and they have a period of time where they go into a career and they may serve as a queen, and the queen is in service to humanity. Beautiful. She is the empress. She serves. It's not someone that's just out to make a lot of money and be the CEO. It's how can I serve and how can I serve in a bigger and bigger way?
That's beautiful.
Oprah is a great example of a queen, you know, and she has all her life served humanity with the work that she's done.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And I love as you're breaking down these various stages of the goddess, because we are all the goddess. And I love the analogies that you're bringing forward for people. And also, you know, with this being March on the 20th, we have a sacred ceremony coming up. And, you know, with the goddess, I believe it's some people call her Astera. Some people call her Ostris. And so we have a big celebration, which moves us then into the Easter time. But this is all that time of that new beginning. And I thought it was so fitting to have you here because people who are listening can look at this and listen and see how they can incorporate. I don't think that you definitely have to be a woman to incorporate all of the beauty that this divine feminine energy brings in. I've noticed that over the years, many men are moving more from that patriarchal mindset of gotta go, gotta do, gotta get it done, to taking a little extra time off, actually learning how to nurture themselves. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that's coming out of your book, is it's really given people a different perspective on another aspect of themselves.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up because the goddess religion is not something just for women. It never was. It's never meant to be. And in the, neo-pagan revival that, worships the goddess, there are as many men as there are women. And the men are very happy with women who see themselves as goddesses and they get treated like a god. So in a polytheistic religion where we see the divine in everything, you have the divine in you, I have the divine in me, there's the divine in the masculine. So there is a celebration of the masculine and feminine coming together in partnership, both of equal power and stature and belonging to themselves. And then that partnership can be of a higher level. But I wanted to just comment on something else you said when you were talking about Astara or Estrus as old names for the goddess and this time of year. Of course, we know estrus refers to the fertility cycle, and
Yes.
spring is when the egg is breaking forth, but that's where we get the name Easter. And that is really adapted from the old goddess tradition, and most people don't know that. And that's why it's always in the spring and after the full moon, because the full moon brings that birth forward, and that's named after the goddess.
Yes, and I'm very excited, to have you on here today. I also am a spiritual teacher, and this entire year is dedicated to studying the various goddesses, the energies that they bring, but it's more about the self-nurturing aspect that I'm trying to pull out because I think that's one thing that has been so lost in our society. As I said, we've been trained to be a society of doers and not a society of beers. And the reality is, when we stop, when we rest, when we nurture, we can be so much more creative.
Absolutely. And that is what the crone brings to us. She says, rest, be still. You don't have to do. You will. She's lived a long time. She's seen it all. So she has wisdom. But she also courts that in the realm of consciousness and being rather than doing. She's no longer raising her children. She's no longer the pretty young maiden flirting with the men. She is removed a bit, and she guides the travelers. Hecate guides travelers at their crossroads. So that's the part of rest that we've lost from our society, and that's renewal.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Now, the Goddess is part of the Common Sentience book series, and it is part of that mystical book series. I want to talk with you a little bit more about the mysticism that surrounds the book and the various goddesses. Because, yes, there are archetypal energies, but there's also a lot of mythology that surrounds them. And I was wondering if you could share some of that with us.
Absolutely. So the goddess comes to us in her stories. And those stories are myths that were once the guiding morality of the culture. They held a culture together. The myths and stories gave us meaning as to why we're here. And when we came into the period of science, true, humanity took a giant step forward as we developed the rational and the scientific. But it's like we took a step forward with our right leg, and we can't take the next step with our left leg again until we bring myth back in. Because science tells us what and how, it doesn't tell us why. It doesn't tell us why we're here. It doesn't tell us what this is as a whole that we're in this life experiment. It doesn't tell us how to behave. It just tells us how to manipulate matter. So the myths are guiding stories, and we learn about the goddesses through their myths. Even in the scientific era, a myth became equated with the word for lie. Oh, that's just a myth. And they weren't true in the rational sense, but they were true as allegories, as teaching. And they modeled for us many things, like when Demeter had lost her daughter and she went as an old beggar woman into the castle, her daughter Persephone, and she went as an old beggar woman into the castle. And when they finally found out who she was, she rose up and Demeter was the goddess of agriculture. And so as she was plowed underground, then, you know, the animals became sickly, the crops began to fail. I mean, there was trouble on Earth. And so when she was rediscovered, having disguised herself as the crone, she rose up in her full glory. And she said, if you want to restore things, build me a temple and reestablish my rights. And by doing that, that will put things back into order again. Mm-hmm. And I call it the holy order of Mother Earth, or home. And so that order, there is a divine order in nature that we need to honor and treat as sacred. And that will bring things into order in our world once again.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Now, you know, there's also a lot of rituals and festivals and practices associated with honoring and worshiping the goddess, even around the agricultural time. And I was wondering if you might could share a few of those with us.
Absolutely. So, you know, when we were an agricultural civilization and the goddess comes from way back then, the cycles of the season were very important. They were life and death. And they were coordinated with astronomy, that the summer solstice was the point on high when the light was at its, you know, its zenith. And then the winter solstice, when the light is at its darkest, the days are shortest, the spring, which is the rebirth, the fall harvest. So by honoring, you know, the four times of the year, the solstices and equinoxes, and the what we call the cross quarter points between the solstices and equinoxes, we get eight holidays of the year that go through the cycle of life. And it's not only agriculture, but we see that the winter solstice is the birth. And we even get the Christian myth of Jesus being born at Christmas, a few days after the winter solstice. That was the rebirth of the sun god. That's why he's called the Sun King. And that was an old, old myth that the Christians adopted. And so that's the birth time. And then, you know, spring equinox is the time of childhood. What we call Beltane, which is around May 1st, is the spring festival. That's the adolescent time. And it's a time of celebration and beauty, and the flowers are poking up, and, you know, the dancing into the earth, the Morris dancing, for example, that they did in Ireland, was pounding into the earth to wake up the earth so she would bring her plants forth. Then the summer solstice is the time of the mother and the father together. And then we come down the wheel. It's called the wheel of the year. We come down the wheel into Lammas, which is the first harvest, the fall equinox, which is the full harvest. Then we come into what the world calls Halloween, which was called Samhain in the old Celtic tradition. And that just means summer's end. But that's a sacred time when things are dying and the veil between the worlds is the thinnest. That's why we can contact our ancestors. And that's what that holiday was about, was getting guidance from the ancestors as we go into winter. And now it's just skeletons and jack-o'-lanterns, but there was something sacred to it in the old days. So they marked very important times to celebrate.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I know when we're putting books together, when we are, you know, even writing, those books begin to influence and impact us. And I was wondering, has this book been a large impact on your life, or is it a birthing process of your life?
Well, it's very interesting how this book came to be. I was ordained as a priestess in 1985, a long, long time ago. And I vowed to serve her above and beyond anything else. So she's been, you know, even though most of my books have not been about, you know, the goddess and the feminine until the last few years, I carried her into all my teachings. You know, anyone who has studied with me said, oh, I sense the priestess in you, you know, that there was always a sense of the sacred. And so I had started writing a book about the goddess 35 years ago. Back when I was writing on a typewriter. That's how long ago it was. And, you know, it was in a notebook and it was on a shelf in my office. And one day I was cleaning my office and I came across that and I opened it up and I sat down and read some of it. And I went, you know, this isn't half bad. I wonder if you're ever going to finish it. And so I just sort of filed it away. And I thought, well, if I'm supposed to, I will. And I put it back on the shelf. And really within a month, I found myself on a Zoom breakout session for my Evolutionary Leaders Council. And I wound up with Ariel Patricia in my Zoom breakout session, and we introduced each other, and I had just introduced another project I had done, She Rises, some archetypes of women's leadership. And she said, oh, I'd like to talk to you about a book. And we set up another Zoom session, and she said, I want you to write a book about the goddess, would you? And I thought, well, this is not even, you know, I didn't look for this. This is coming to me. And I just found that manuscript. So obviously the goddess wants me to do this. And so I said a full and hearty yes to it. And the process was really just bringing together what I've lived all my life, what I've known. And it was a joy because I've studied history and mythology for decades. And I was able to bring that forth.
That's beautiful. Now, I am wondering, could you share one of the myths that has really touched you that's associated with the goddesses?
Well, yes. And I've mentioned the myth of Demeter, but there's much yes. more to that. And so I'll go into that a little bit more because it's okay. so rich for our time. So back when patriarchy was starting to take over the goddess tradition, and the goddess ruled the heavens, the earth, and the underworld, which is where plants come from. The patriarchal gods of Greece started to take over those realms. They put Zeus in the heavens, they put Poseidon over the land and the sea, and they put Hades in the underworld. And these men thought they would take over everything. Well, what happened in the underworld is that as people died and the souls went to the underworld to be reborn, there was no mother there to be reborn. And it was getting very crowded in the underworld. And Hades didn't know what to do. He couldn't bring these people back into their rebirth. And so he went to his brother Zeus and said, what should I do? And Zeus says, oh, I'll give you my daughter. Now, Zeus didn't ask the daughter if she wanted, the daughter who was the springtime maiden known as Kore, didn't say, oh, this, you know, goddess of the future, the goddess of the spring, the goddess of rebirth, I'm going to put you in the underworld and become the queen of death. Is that okay with you? You know, he didn't ask, he didn't tell her mother. So her mother had no say in it. He just set it up. And so one day when Kore was out picking flowers, Hades swooped up from the underworld in his chariot drawn by black horses and abducted her and brought her down into the underworld while she screamed. Now, Zeus, if anyone was, if Hades, if anyone was around, said to people, don't anyone say what they saw happen for fear of the all-father Zeus. He might have retribution. So lips were sealed. So when Demeter, you know, when her daughter didn't come home that night and she went out seeking her, what happened? What happened? No one would tell her what happened. And finally, she comes across Hecate, the crone goddess, who says, well, I didn't see what happened, but I heard her scream and I know something's wrong. And so Demeter became very distraught because here's her daughter and here's the goddess of the future. She goes to Helios, who is the sun god in the sky, who looks down and sees everything. And Helios says, oh, yeah, I saw it all, but don't worry. You know, yeah, she went into the underworld, but don't worry. She made a good marriage. He's a rich man. You should be happy. You know, he's got a third of the kingdom. You know, what's the worry? And Demeter goes off in a rage and she fasts for 9 days. She refuses food and wine. And she walks the 9 miles from Athens to Eleusis that became later part of the Eleusinian Mysteries. And she beats her brow and she's in deep mourning and grief and rage over the whole thing. And so finally in her, as I mentioned, she disguises herself as an old beggar woman and she gets a job in a castle for the queen, being a nursemaid to a new baby that was born. And every night, when she's watching the baby, she roasts the baby in the fireplace because she's immortal and she can do that. And that would turn the baby into a god. Well, only goddesses can do that. But one night the mother comes in and sees her baby roasting in the fire. And you can imagine that mother would be rather concerned. So she screams in rage and banishes the old beggar woman from the castle. And at that point, that snaps Demeter out of her trance. And she throws off her disguise and she rises up in her full glory. And the queen goes, oh my goodness, this was the goddess that I just disgraced. What can I do? What can I do? She falls to her knees And that's when Demeter says what I said before. If you want to set things right, build me a temple and establish my rights. So they built a temple at Eleusis where this happened, and that was called the Telesterion. And for 2,000 years, all Greeks, people from all over the world, came to experience the Eleusinian mysteries. And what they did in those mysteries, they went into the they would fast for 9 days, walking with their chickens and their goats and their family from the 9 miles from Athens to Eleusis. That road is still there. You can see it in Greece. And they would go into the Telesterion and they would drink a drink called the Kikion, which was pennyroyal and barley. And some people say the barley probably had ergot on it, which is something that is a hallucinogenic. And after fasting for 9 days, they drank this drink, they celebrated, they made music and ritual, and they all came back saying, I have seen the end of life and its goddess sent beginning. I am immortal, I will not fade away. And so they saw the mystery of life and the cycle and how it was reborn. And this was something that everyone did. Slaves and merchants and, you know, kings and queens and, you know, of all aspects of Greek society. And no one ever told what the deep mystery was that happened down there in the Telesterion. So we don't know. Even in 2,000 years, it was forbidden to speak of it because you were an initiate and you didn't tell what the initiation was. So that's Demeter. And I feel right now, if we want to set things right in the world, that we need to reestablish the goddess temples that were destroyed by patriarchy, knocked down. That's why they're ruins, right? They were ruined. And we need to reestablish the rites and the rituals that honor the sacred in everything.
I am right there with you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now, you know, as you were talking, you touched upon rites. And so, do any specific rites come to mind associated with the goddess that you really think could influence people if they just began to incorporate them into their lives?
Well, there's so many, you know, and one is just to go outside. Yeah. We live our lives indoors behind screens with a roof over our head, to go outside where the sun is shining. Right now in the Northern Hemisphere, it's spring. And to look at, you know, spring popping up, I'm looking at the little buds on the trees outside my window right now and feel the goddess. And to be grateful, to say thank you. And to say thank you for everything we use. You know, if I get some takeout, you know, a coffee cup or something, and I'm using it for all of 10 minutes while I drink my coffee and I throw it away, I say, thank you. Thank you for the use of that. Thank you for your body. A ritual that I have written up in my book is a ritual of apology, because so much was done to the goddess. I mean, she was systematically wiped out. As I say, the temples were destroyed, the statues were beheaded and knocked down, the priestesses were killed. You know, later on, it became the Inquisition, where hundreds of thousands of women were burned at the stake. It became a risk to even speak the goddess's name. You could be killed for that at certain periods of history, until she was so wiped out, we didn't know about her. And then you consider what we've done to the earth. It is time for some truth and reconciliation. And so to just go outside, even in your backyard or in a park, and, you know, just come down to the ground, touch the ground with your hands and say, Mother, I am so sorry for what has been done to you. And it's not that you yourself, Sheila, are doing that to her. You know, I mean, it happened a long time ago, but it's just like if someone in you said you had a death in the family recently, I can say, I'm so sorry for that, even though I didn't cause it. There's something in the apology that, you know, is healing. And so I think if we really did that and acknowledged what happened to the goddess and what it has cost civilization to bring us to the crisis we're in now, that this begins to restore and heal the relationship, because we have a relationship with the divine and we want to heal that relationship.
You know, Judith, there is so much passion and knowledge and love in the words that you're sharing with us. That just doesn't happen overnight. So I was wondering if we can back up for just a minute and have you to share a little bit about your story, your personal story that's kind of brought you to where you are today.
Oh my goodness, that's a long. I'm 71 years old now, so it's a long story that has many twists and turns. But I would say I discovered the goddess back in 1975, around the same time I discovered yoga and began practicing and teaching yoga. But I was really just gung-ho for the goddess to learn everything I could, and I studied mythology and history, as I mentioned. And in that period, I decided to sell off everything I had and just buy this old Jeep, four-wheel drive Jeep, and move off the grid to a remote mountaintop and live alone in the forest. And I did this for about 2 months. I mean, I was so poor then, I didn't even have my own tent, but the person who owned the land had a tent and said, you can stay there. And so I just lived up there. It was a Even in the four-wheel drive, I couldn't drive to the top of the mountain. I could only drive to within a couple miles of it, and then the rest I carried in my backpack up the top of the hill. And I lived in a natural way. I built a fire every night. I watched the sunrise. I collected dew on little sponges tied to my ankles for water. I learned to move the clouds with my hands. I became part of nature. And funny thing, one day, someone came to the hiking up to the top of the mountain, and they were from a church called Church of All Worlds that worshiped the goddess. And I was invited down and to join some of their ceremonies. And they were, it was part of a big 3,500 acre ranch that was divided into parcels and owned by a bunch of hippies that were doing the Back to the Land movement. And so I joined with those folks. Oberon Zell, he has a book in the story in the book, been a lifelong friend. And by 1985, this was in the 70s, by 1985, I became high priestess of the church. I started a school for teaching magic and training people. And we ordained more people as the years went on. We had a magazine we published. We had a 55-acre piece of land. We had some other sister churches around the world. At one point we got pretty big, and that was when I promised to serve her above and beyond all else. But at the same time, I was also developing my chakra work, which is what I'm mostly known for. I was teaching all over the world. I was writing my books and doing my training programs, and I raised four kids in the meantime too. So there's been a lot of different twists and turns to the journey, but the goddess has always, always been there.
That is a beautiful story. Beautiful. Now, I thought today it was apropos that we're doing this interview because it also is the birth date of Lord Shiva. And there is a huge celebration taking place. And so that makes me obviously begin to think of the gods as well as the goddesses. And I'm wondering what your viewpoint is in relationship to the divine masculine, divine feminine, god, goddess concepts.
Well, yeah, I quote someone in my book who said, the goddess religion didn't just incorporate the masculine, it required the masculine to be part of it. It was not something separate, never was it something separate. And that in a polytheistic religion, there are gods and goddesses. And you mentioned Lord Shiva. Well, in the Hindu pantheon, they come in pairs. And so the three aspects we talk about, maiden, mother, crone. Well, this is there in the Hindu pantheon. So Saraswati is the patroness of the arts. She is the creator goddess. Her partner is Brahma, and Brahma, it breathes life into existence. Saraswati turns it into art. So he is the emanation, and she is the decorator. She makes it beautiful. Then we come into the middle period that rules, over the ongoing constitution of life, and that is Lakshmi, and her partner is Vishnu. Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth and beauty. So she's the maturing of what Saraswati creates in terms of art. She flushes that out and it matures into fullness. Lakshmi represents fullness, and that's why she's wealth. And so she and Vishnu rule, they're called the sustainers. So we have creation, sustaining, and then Shiva, his partner, is Kali or Kali Ma. And they are the destroyer aspects. Now, it's not destruction in a bad way. It's destruction of illusion. It's destruction of the ego. It's destruction of that which stands in your way so that you can be liberated. And, you know, but Kali is fierce. You know, she's depicted with a long red tongue from drinking blood, and she has, you know, severed heads and arms on her belt. She carries a severed head and she has severed arms on her belt, and she's dancing on the corpse of Shiva, because Shiva is consciousness, but the goddess brings him to life.
Thank you so much. Now I have another question, because throughout time and in many societies, there's tons of symbology that's associated with the goddess, and there's symbols, whether they're on rocks, in caves, whatever. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the symbology associated with the goddess.
Well, yes, you know, when we were living in the land, you know, there was Grandmother Mountain.
Yeah.
There was Mother Ocean. There was Sister River. There was, you know, the old oak tree that had, you know, there was spirit in everything. And so all these were animations, and they were given a personality. And so a lot of the myths came about through how we looked at, you know, Grandmother Mountain. You know, Grandmother Mountain stands above everything while her children, you know, come down the river. And, you know, it was all given meaning. And so this, you know, we have to realize we came from a world of nature, and we are embedded in a world of nature. And it's not that we want to destroy all buildings. And, you know, I lived off the grid in a tent without electricity before cell phones. I loved it. It was one of the most special times in my life, but I wouldn't necessarily choose to do that again at this point in my life. You know, there is something to be said for what we have. We wouldn't be talking to each other without technology, but we don't want to lose sight of that. And so the animation is part of all of that in the stories.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, I want to jump back specifically to the book. Earlier, you referred to, I think it was meditation practices as home in the garden or in the goddess book. And I was wondering if you could explain this just a little bit more. I'm thinking so much about the garden. It's like, man, if there wasn't so much snow, I'd love to get outside today and put my hands down in the earth. But we still have about 3 feet of snow here in Colorado.
Oh, wow. You're in Colorado. Yeah. So remind me of the question. I followed you into this.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about the meditation practice
in the home
that
in
you
home.
Have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a meditation practice in the book. And I also have a goddess master class where this is recorded with music, of breathing the goddess into and out of each one of your chakras. And chakras are energy centers in the body that I've worked with quite a bit. So it's breathing the consciousness of the goddess into you. And by breathing that back out, you're breathing her into the world, breathing the vision of the goddess into you, and then breathing it back out by seeing her and everything, breathing the words of the goddess and the inspiration and breathing it out from your mouth, breathing the love of the goddess in and breathing her out, breathing the power of the goddess in, bringing the pleasure of the goddess in and bringing her into every cell of your body. And that is a meditation of just breathing the goddess in and out. And in that we become the goddess, but not only do we become it, we bring her more present in the world.
So. That is beautiful. I can't wait to go through that. That's awesome. Now, I have another question that maybe it's a little bit of a loaded question here, but when we talk about the goddess and the energy and the power that she brings and just the majesty and magnitude, I was wondering if you could kind of paint the picture of the world that you would envision when the goddess is in her fullness on and anchored onto this planet.
Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful question. Well, if I ask what humanity is here to do on the planet at this time, what is our task? You know, why did Gaia, you know, the goddess of the earth, why did she create humans with opposable thumbs who can text on cell phones and talk on Zoom? What are we here to do? We're here to create heaven on earth. It's not about going to heaven. It's about bringing heaven down. In fact, one of my friends says, we don't need to raise hell to change the world. We just need to lower heaven. And so to create heaven on earth, you know, what would that look like? Well, one of the aspects of the goddess is beauty. We look at our cities and there's not much beauty, you know, in the architecture. I mean, some buildings have it, but on the whole, city streets aren't very attractive. But what if we created a world of beauty? How would we feel to walk into a world where nature and civilization were married in a beautiful marriage and relationship to each other? So there's plants everywhere, indoors and out, and the buildings are in harmony with the landscape. What would it be like to have a world that is full of creativity, music, dancing, celebration? That is the fifth chakra. What would it be like to have a world based on love? And one of my books, Waking the Global Heart, was really how do we move to a love-based civilization? And so a world you would love to live in, where you wake up in the morning and go, I love what I see outside my window. I love what I'm doing. I love who I'm working with. What would it be like to have a world where people feel empowered? You know, today, most people look at the things going on in the world, climate change and whatnot, and they go, I don't know what to do. It's beyond me. I'm not empowered. But in the patriarchal system, there was power over, so people felt disempowered. But what if each one of us felt empowered to do something, to work together, to affect the world? What would it be like in a world where pleasure was honored and celebrated as sacred rather than made something wrong or something we have to feel guilty about? Mm-hmm. And what would it be like in the world where the environment and our bodies were healthy? And so we can go down the chakras and we can say, this is the aspects that the goddess would bring, you know, and I think this wave of feminism, you know, we had a wave of feminism back in the 60s that was women's liberation. And that's when we burned our bras and took the curlers out of our hair. And we started going after the masculine jobs, you know, let us into the workplace, let us make our own money. That was great. But women were becoming more like men. And that was the problem. We were still adapting to a patriarchal world that we had been shut out of. And so we said, let us in to that patriarchal world. But many women that, you know, rose up the ranks said, wait a minute, I'm not being me. You know, I'm becoming more like a man. And so I think this wave of feminism is bringing in the feminine values that have been missing from the public conversation, the values of love, of compassion, of beauty, of celebration, of enjoyment, of embodiment. These values have been diminished with the diminishment of the goddess, and they are essential values to heal our world. So now it's bringing back what the goddess stands for. It's not so much about liberating women, though that still needs to happen because a lot of women around the world are still terribly oppressed. And, you know, we've recently lost, you know, the right over our own bodies. So there's still a long way to go, but it's about bringing those values back to the discourse of how we create our world.
That's the world I want to live in and the world that I'm going to envision and try to anchor. So, you know, I feel like we've really done a deep dive today into the goddess energy, but I'm wondering, are there any final thoughts or anything that maybe we haven't covered that you want to bring forward?
Well, you know, just to bring the goddess into your life, to realize how much, I mean, think about how many temples, existing temples to the goddess there are versus how many churches, synagogues, and mosques in the world. I mean, those number in the millions, and we, you know, could count on one, maybe two hands of, you know, goddess temples that aren't in ruins, you know, so there's a big discrepancy there. We have a long way to go to bring her up to an equal status. But the purpose is partnership. And as we reach up to the Divine Father and we reach up to the Divine Mother, or reach down to the Divine Mother as Mother Earth, and we bring them together, that's what gives birth to a new world. And what they create is called the Divine Child in mythology. And the Divine Child has powers beyond the mother and father, powers that we have not seen before. And I think only when we have this balance, we are the Divine Child and we are giving birth to the future. The future is the Divine Child, but we can only create a future where masculine and feminine are balanced and integrated.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Now, so much of what we've talked about is found in your new book. So can you tell people how they can find the book?
It is, you know, you mentioned spring equinox, March 20th. That's the publishing date. But you can get it on Amazon now, and that's just a couple weeks away. Goddess Blessed Reunions with the Feminine Face of the Divine. And the book is, you know, theory, and it's stories of people's personal encounters with the goddess and its practices.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sheila. What a great interview. Goddess bless, and here's to International Women's Day.
That's right. You've been listening to Anadea Judith on Conscious Awakening Series podcast, broadcast on the Conscious Awakening Network. Please check us out on the ConsciousAwakeningNetwork.org. Sign up to be on our mailing list so you do not miss any of these phenomenal presentations. So I want to thank you again for being with us. And until next time, thank you for joining and have a blessed day. Namaste.